Hello and welcome everyone to the Lovely Travels Podcast!
Woo!
This week, Emma talks to the lovely Alison Hallworth about just travel memories and experiences during travel. Emma, how do you know Alison?
I met Alison because she is a fellow blogger. And we were both became World Vision blog ambassadors. So we met through that program. And it's really funny because I actually, I went on a trip with World Vision to see their programs, as did Alison. And when I was talking to her all about this travel podcast that I was starting, I sort of really didn't put her into the travel category. And that is very prejudiced of me. I put her in more of the family category and some of the stuff she writes about is more. Family. She writes about a lot of things, actually. She, social justice, humanitarian, so much stuff. And, you know, she's done a lot of travel. And so I checked my prejudice at the door, got her on the podcast. And, as is the name of her blog, Talking Frankly, we spoke very frankly about many things.
That sounds good. I enjoy frank talks.
Yeah. That was really great. And we were super open about mental health as well, which was really awesome to get that topic brought up because that is one of the aims of this podcast. So we do talk about things, all things travel and adventure, but we're also raising awareness for mental health and contributing to a mentally healthier world. So
we're doing our best.
We are. So there we go. Enjoy, guys.
Yeah, I think you could say that with less of a question mark in it.
Enjoy, guys.
Okay, no, everyone enjoy the episode. It's a good one. And we'll see you at the end.
Hi, Alison. Welcome to Lovely Travels Podcast.
Hey, Em. How are you today?
I'm very well. I'm so excited to have you on, and I'm gonna be honest. So told Alison, lovely Alison, who's going to introduce herself soon, about my podcast, and she was full of cracking ideas, as she always is. But I'm not going to lie, I didn't think of you as to be one of my first guests, which is very judgmental and rude of me because you don't do as much travel now as you used to.
No, I mean, look, that's just getting older and having children and things like that. And it's not that my travel days are over by any stretch, but once you start having children. Also, I'm married to a Brit, which means that our last trip ended up being back to the UK, which of course is always lovely, but visiting family is a little bit different from jaunting.
Yeah, 100%. So, naughty slap on the wrist for me for being very travel. What do you call it? Prejudice. I was like, if you're not gallivanting around the world, you're not even a traveller. But you know, people travel at different stages of their life, and yes, as you say, it doesn't mean just because you're not travelling. And we have known each other for it's at least 4 or 5 years. 5 years, I'd say now. Well, I went to Uganda, so six years.
Yeah. And I've been to India since then.
So I know, exactly. And that clicked to me later. So just very rude and judgmental. So anyway, Alison, please tell me a bit about, you know, ask that real existential crisis, who are you question.
Who are you? Well, one of the things I'm Alison Hallworth, and I became friends when we met, and I think pro blogger, which is because I write a blog called Talking Frankly, which is about everything from housework to human rights. I also do some mentoring, some writing. I work in the digital marketing space. I'm a mother of two girls, married to said Brit, as I said before. But most of all, I always like to say that I identify as human, because it is the one thing that links us all on this planet, very much so. Doesn't matter. I mean, it is the one thing. There is no other thing. So that's where I like to start.
And you are a connector, and you very much bring people together. And, you and I connected because then we went to the – we saw each other at the Pro Blogger Day, but we also saw each other the Blogger Day for World Vision.
Yes.
So both were World Vision blog ambassadors, and we're probably both the most outspoken in the room. So every time there was a thing, it'd be like, well, I have a comment.
I'm going to say something.
Yeah,
and I think it's fair to say, Emma, that we both suffer from the same affliction, which is that we genuinely like people, which means that we don't have to fake that, which I actually think, I think when you're younger, you kind of think that it's a bit weird, but as you get older, you just start to realise that, you know, that's the fun bit, the people. So.
Yeah. And so you have a British husband, but you're based in Sydney.
Yes.
How did you two meet then?
It's so cliched. Okay, so I briefly lived in Sydney when I was young, but I'm not really from here. And I had been living in Gympie, of all places. Before I headed across to London, belatedly to do my, you know, gap years when I was in my late 20s. And I'd been living in London for a couple of years and I had got to the point where I was like, oh, I think I'll come home now. And I moved into this house in Deptford on Elverson Road with a friend of mine, Justin, who I've known all my life. And there was a couple of brothers that lived there as well. A girl called Zoe, and there was this mystery housemate that I didn't meet before I moved in because he was off at Glastonbury, and that was Nick. So I met him and we started dating, and we spent 6 months talking about how our relationship was clearly not going to work because I was going back to Australia, you know, so many reasons. Anyway, in the end we decided I went off to Ireland for a year, and I lived in Dublin and worked for Microsoft over there, and we did the London-Dublin commute, and then I went back to London where we spent another couple of years. We'd run out of visa options, so we came to Australia for a year, and that was 13 years ago. So.
Yeah. Well, my parents did the same, but they were both English and came here for 1 year, and they celebrated their 39th anniversary in Australia this week.
Wow, congratulations.
I think that happens quite a bit, but that is like such a rom-com.
I know. It is. And honestly, there were moments where we'd lie on Blackheath in the middle, you know, at night, you know, smoking. Well, I'd be smoking cigarettes because he wasn't a smoker, drinking wine and just like, you know, talking about our crises, our ill-fated love. And anyway, basically, we were just wasting time. But, yeah, no, it is. I like to say that the first time we kissed, he ran away. He says I exaggerate, but, you know.
You do like to tell a story. You do like to, you know, that's why you're here. That's why you were invited on this. But even the Glastonbury bit, it's just like, oh, just there. It's great. Yeah. I love it. It's what I wanted. It's what I thought was going to happen when I would go away to London, or I'm going to go on one of my holidays. And then, it was in my hometown on Tinder.
Yeah.
And I love him. I know.
I was pre-Tinder, so way pre-Tinder. Yeah, no, he was definitely, you know, I make no bones about the fact that the first thing I noticed was that he had a cute butt because he walked in front of me. I got back from Glastonbury. I was at home sick, lying on the couch in the communal living area, and he walked past. And then he turned around. He's just got the most stunning blue eyes. And
he does.
Yeah, so that was it, really. So,
aww.
Yeah. But, we did a few trips, actually, over the years following that. We went across to Turkey and to, you know, I'm having a mind blank, somewhere else. We did a bit of travelling there and, you know, we've obviously done honeymoons in New Zealand and all those kind of things that you do once you get on this side of the globe. So, yeah.
Yeah. And I was going to ask, so, you know, though you're having a mind blank, and it's a tough question for people who've been to a few places, but what would you say is your favourite country or the favourite place you visited?
If we're going really, really micro, there's an island off the coast of Costa Rica called the Island de Tortuga. I've probably pronounce that incorrectly. And to get there, you basically went to this really, really dodgy village right on the water and got into essentially a tin boat. And I was traveling with my sister and a friend, and we caught this boat. And as you headed out to this island, the sun was shining and there was dolphins and it was just all so beautiful. And you got out, and this island, I think, is privately owned, and it was to regenerate a lot of the the stuff, and we parked the boat and we jumped off it and we went snorkeling, which is actually my first time snorkeling, quite strangely. This is about 20 years ago, quite literally, and just swimming, and with these big manta rays that were the size of a Volkswagen, and there were these big turtles that were nesting on this island, and it was just absolutely, but the thing about it was that there was no commerce on the island at all. Any waste you took there, you brought back, you know, the right from, you know, your pooping and peeing down to your lunch kind of thing. And it was so peaceful. Like, it was just this small piece of paradise. And then the funny thing was, we ended up all overstaying our welcome, all the people on the boat. And as we were coming back, it was like hitting the waves. There was no dolphins. You could come in, you could see all the landslides. It was like, yeah, you'd kind of walk towards a fairy tale and then back towards reality. But it was just the most perfect day. It was really beautiful. But yeah, I've got lots of, I kind of have favorite bits of every country that I kind of go to. So, and quite often they're bound up more with the activities or the people that I was with. So, I have a funny story about canoeing in Russia. It was supposed to be lightweight canoeing and camping kind of thing as we went up, and we were doing it with some Russians. And, you know, there was all these potatoes, and a guy that was in my boat was, you know, playing his guitar as I'm canoeing literally up the Volga, so it's against the current. But, you know, we'd camp and roast potatoes and just saw all these parts of Russia. It was shortly after the fall of communism, so there was all this stuff that was still boarded up from that time. And, you know, and then you go and you see the Kremlin and all this stuff, which is really amazing, and that was really cool. And when Nick and I were in Turkey, you know, we went skinny dipping in the Mediterranean at nighttime, and, you know, off this massive boat. And, you know, it's just one of those, like, there's just little moments from everywhere that's just pretty fantastic. So, yeah.
It's nice to pull on those memories. And
yeah.
So before you mentioned, and, you know, it's funny because this week I put it up as well, that we both went on a trip with World Vision to see their work. So, yeah, I actually shared that in my Lovely Travels Facebook group. So I went in 2014 to Uganda. Were you meant to be on that one? Was that you? No, there's someone who was meant to be on it, and I pipped them. I ended up
going.
Yeah.
Well, no, I went to India in 2016. With a couple of other bloggers, and then I was supposed to go in 2017, but I broke my sacrum.
Yep, falling off the toilet.
Yes,
I was standing on it.
I just want everyone to know.
Which, like, Alison, to be fair, like, in a lot of airports around the world, they do show the sign of how you're supposed to use the toilet, and one of the things is do not stand on the seat. So,
but I was standing on my own toilet trying to use the mirror above the bathroom. I just like to say, I don't know why people put mirrors up so high. Anyway, I did not go to Indonesia because I had a sacrum broken in three places and a torn rotator cuff, so hiking in the wilds of Indonesia was not going to be plausible. But I did go to India, and we did a combination of visiting projects in rural India and also urban, which I found quite fascinating. I hadn't been just as a tourist, but I really enjoyed that trip. I was travelling with some cracking people, Tanima, Deborah and Kelly, all of whom were strangers to me before we left. But such a unique opportunity to, like, as you know, with World Vision's work, a lot of it is the funding basically ends up empowering women and communities to develop in all sorts of different ways. And so, you know, it was, 4 years ago, I had quite young children still, and it was coming together between, you know, meeting other mothers and things in completely different circumstances that were still wanting the same thing for their children, et cetera, but also getting to see parts of India that tourists don't get to go to, you know. And as you know, India is a very beautiful country. And
it was Chennai, right?
Chennai was,
where you flew into.
We went down, that's where we went in and out of. And we went down to Pudukkottai, which is not how the Indians would pronounce it at all. But, yeah, further south, which was the kind of rural area. And, really lovely. I really enjoyed it, actually. But I've done similar work, similar trips in just after my honeymoon in 2009. I went to Ecuador for a week and helped build a medical centre just near Quito,
mm-hmm.
As part of a project which was funded by the Bupa Health Fund. And I'd also done a project via the Scouts in, I think it was 1991. We were in Indonesia in that case, digging water pipes and things on the northern half of Java for some of the villages and things as part of their regeneration projects. A lot of those regeneration projects did not fare so well in the tsunami.
Mm.
But, I've done various of those kind of projects. I think... We live in a world where if you've got the opportunity to give back, you should.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's a really invaluable part of travelling, I think, to understand how other people live and what their priorities are. And, you know, if you go to another country and just expect it to be the same as home, well, don't go.
Well, and on that, I think you are, and Alison has a wonderful lens that she looks through, and her blog is quite true, talking frankly. She does talk very frankly. And one of your blogs is about toilets. Wasn't it like, I'll never look at a toilet the same again or something that?
Yeah, well, that was fascinating because, I mean, you think of toilets as just somewhere to put poop. but, you know, when you actually look at them in the context of they're installing them in various places, but particularly the urban slums of Chennai, they had been affected very badly by those floods in the year before, 2015 floods. And from a safety and dignity perspective, you know, young girls and things were having to go down to the river to perform their ablutions and things like that. Of course, you would wait till it was dark, which meant that it was unsafe. So, you know, you build blocks of four toilets, you give people the responsibility of looking after them. You've all of a sudden, you've been, you know, your hygiene, your sanitation, dignity, it improves education outcomes, health outcomes, employment outcomes. Like, it's just, yeah, a toilet
is not. Take it for granted.
Yeah.
Toilet is not just a toilet. We'll have to put the link into it because, yeah, I do remember that.
Yeah.
No, that was really great. And I think the difference with our trips to some other trips, we were there very much there in an observational capacity and yep. We were there as ambassadors. So our work on those trips was to observe the community, to meet with the people who are receiving the benefit and the people who are doing the work. And I think the thing that I always take away from my World Vision trips, I've been fortunate to go to a few of their projects, is the staff on the ground are so dedicated. There's volunteers as well, local community volunteers that help to extend the programs, but there are staff who work at the community level and at their sort of office level, and they just give their all and they just love these communities, and I just, that always just melted my heart.
Yeah, well, I've always found it quite fascinating. In 2000, I was lucky enough to go to Taiwan, and I was representing I was there as a youth leader in a service organisation, and they were looking at women volunteers, so it was kind of all female, but it was women in leadership positions in volunteer organisations, and we were discussing the issues that were affecting young women in the Australasia area. Now, obviously, you think of most of the countries in the Australasian area, and that was Singapore, New Zealand and Australia, obviously first world countries, and the rest, you know, fall very heavily into developing nation. And the issues affecting a lot of the young girls at the time were things like honour killings, acid burn, child marriage, starvation, you know, and in first world countries we're lucky enough to, by and large, be in a position where we can really focus on our mental health and, you know, so we had things like drugs and self-esteem and all those kind of things. But the thing that really fascinated me is some of these girls, are, you know, in terms of trying to, you know, comprehend their lack of choice, they found it really hard to comprehend the amount of choice that I had. You know, I was there. I didn't have to ask my dad's permission. I didn't have to ask him if I could cut my hair. I lived with my boyfriend. You know, I'd been traveling for 3 months, et cetera, et cetera. And then they are there because of the permission of parents, generally fathers or husbands. But there was one girl that I met there on that trip. She had actually got not just her husband or her then fiancé, became husband, and his family to forfeit the dowry so they could vaccinate the village, her village. And that was a huge thing, right? And it really brought home to me that whenever we go and we have these opportunities to visit countries, there are so many of the things that we bitch about when we go traveling. Oh my God, the cost of vaccinations or whatever. You know what I mean? But we take the rest of it for granted. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, where and they were just talking basic vaccinations to keep them, you know, well and all the rest of it. So I try very much to remember that. That perspective and that context means so much when you're visiting somebody else's country.
And that's like 100%, and that's like the word is, it's perspective. And I don't really like when people say here, you know, if you're having a bad day, and you brought it up before with, you know, we have different issues here. We're dealing with, you know, you're looking at Maslow's hierarchy of needs. We're on different levels. And I saw that when I went to Tanzania to visit my sponsor child. It's like he doesn't want a flat screen TV on the wall. They don't need cars. You look like getting a car there is really difficult. We're in the Maasai tribe in the desert. But like education, access to water, having enough goats to, you know, continue the herd. There were just different things, safety, security, that were more important. So somebody tells, like, sometimes here in Australia people go, oh, well, you know, there's starving children in Africa. I'm like, I'm not starving. Yeah, I can't understand that. You need to put in a bit of perspective. So please don't guilt trip me. I'm very well aware of the challenges around the world, but I live in my sphere and I'm dealing with my I have to live in this space. I can't live with that lens all the time. You have to take that lens when you go there and put things into perspective. But when I come home, we have to deal with the issues that we face here. So, you know, culture, context, it's complex. That's why the work is so challenging in development. You can't just roll out one solution.
And it's different. I mean, it's even just, you know, people say Australia and America are so alike, for instance, and I always find that quite fascinating because, and obviously the gun culture is the big difference, right, we just don't deal with people carrying guns here in Australia, right? It just doesn't happen, okay? And you know, whether or not you enjoy recreational shooting or whatever you do, people just don't carry guns. That's just a norm. So that's just even to first world countries, so to speak. But I know that when we were traveling through Central America, and I think I've told you this story previously, Emma, we were crossing from one of the borders and we'd had to pay our fees and get ourselves you know, just across the border. So you kind of paid, you had to cross on a bridge or whatever, and you know, we'd been upsold kind of thing, you know, as gullible tourists, even though my sister speaks, I was traveling with my sister still, and, you know, she speaks fluent Spanish and all the rest of it. But, you know, she negotiated, we got on these things and we crossed the border. Anyway, I turned around and, as you know, I'm quite tall. My sister has not been blessed with the same genes. She's quite short, and which is very non-threatening when you're meeting children all the way through Central America,
yeah, as
I point out. So that worked out very nicely for us as we jaunted. But I turn around, you know, where is she kind of thing, and I look over my shoulder and there she is. She's standing there and she's gesticulating and she's crying and she's surrounded by these small men, right, just that's their full height, but they're all carrying these giant Uzi gun things that were bigger than they were, and they're all pointing at her and she's crying and, you know, she's looking really distressed. And, you know, I've looked at Richard and I've gone, right, we've kind of reached into the middle, raced back, reached the middle of the circle, we're throwing American dollars into the air and we'll hauled her over the line into the next country. We're like, what's wrong, are you okay? And I was like really upset, and you know, because I couldn't work out what was going on. But she was just really frustrated because they were trying to get more money out of us. But she felt, you know, very strongly that she'd already negotiated the rate. So what we saw as threatening, she was just arguing with them. And it's like, okay, rule number one for the rest of this trip, because if I go home without you with me, my mother, your mother, is never going to forgive us, okay? Yeah. So if somebody yells at us and they have a gun, give them the money. People that have guns win the argument. It's that simple. She's like, but they were trying to cheat us. I don't care. This is not something we're negotiating for the rest of the trip. And I totally, you know, I mean, absolutely, when we, you know, we had some distance between it, I could see from her perspective she felt completely comfortable, you know, they were just having an argument and all the rest of it. But from an external point of view, where my comprehension of Spanish was not sufficient to be part of that conversation,
look, and I've been one to argue in Spanish. It is I think it is kind of a little bit of a language, a little bit of a, it's a communication style, but you know, sometimes mine was under the influence of alcohol, so maybe a little bit of a Dutch courage. But, yeah, when people are fully armoured up with guns in their hands, and you know, it's generally not the greatest time to stand your ground. But they were accusing me of having drugs in the car. I was like, I don't have drugs. I don't have drugs. I don't have drugs. I don't have drugs. They're like, oh, she's too much hard work. Let it go. She's like, oh, this little blonde girl is just too much. Nice. But I do want to come back to the point you said about the different challenges that we're facing, the different communities, because one of my, in the different countries and cultures that we, you know, and you are wonderful in your humankind approach. And one of the messages of this podcast and of my mission to travel around the world is to discuss mental health. And being that you talk frankly and we're both quite outspoken about mental health. So it's something that it is very prevalent in our community and in certainly sort of maybe more open in Western culture now, like it's coming out, but it's certainly something they face in other places too. But I'm just glad that you touched on that, because I do believe, and not asking you to go into a long-winded story by any means, but just that it's something that's there. And I believe that the more we talk about it, talk more openly about it, the better it's going to be.
Well, yeah, it's no secret. I was the first time I knew officially that I had depression was postnatal depression. I had a particularly traumatic first birth experience, and I was pregnant quite quickly with my second child because I knew that if I didn't do it quickly, I wouldn't go back at all. I had postnatal depression, post-traumatic stress, and then once I got a formal diagnosis, I came to realise that I'd been living with depression probably all my life. I was a self-harmer as a teenager, you know, the kind of thing you hit under, you know, your jeans or whatever, and, you know, I always just thought I was really shit at life, you know, even when I travelled or I moved or I did things that just everyone else seemed to be really, it seemed to be effortless and I never seemed to get it. And it was only when, you know, I got a really great psychologist that was recommended to me by an excellent GP that I started to work through and realised that it just basically my brain doesn't work. I didn't come to that realisation easily. You know, I'm a spokesperson for Beyond Blue these days, and one of the things I do like to point out is that I was writing about having depression. I was happy to talk about it, and part of the reason I was happy to talk about it is the moment I started talking about it on my blog, on my Facebook page, the number of people that came out had suffered in silence, you know, with either postnatal depression, regular depression, all manners of it, anxiety, et cetera, never felt they could say anything because people didn't understand. I had a really I had a suicidal year in 2017, and that was my turning point. That was when I accepted that taking myself off my medication and things like that was not going to be a good plan for the future. And I'm very conscious of it now. And look, you know, everyone's journey on these things is different. God, I use the word journey. You'll have to cut me off your next podcast.
No, we're on a journey on this podcast. So I am that person.
Oh my God. But that reaching rock bottom there for me was the turning point for me. And you know, it's for my girls as much as anything. You know, I want to see them grow old. And as you know, I also had a brain bleed last year, and it's amazing how that shifts your perspective as well. There's a lot less giving a fuck about what other people think and just owning, you know, the fact that you've got some things that work really well and some things that don't. And my brain has its moments, I think, is the best way to put it. But the really interesting thing I find when traveling is that it's, you know, even when I was in India, just speaking to some of the people that helped us, you know, the World Vision guys, you know, they were just talking about, you know, becoming parents and things like that had been really hard for them because particularly working with some of the World Vision stuff and, you know, being really proactive about female empowerment and things like that was really breaking with some of the traditional mindsets that had been in existence, and it could be actually quite a lonely place to work for a progressive organisation, and they were very conscious that they were trying to parent their own daughters in ways that gave them a lot more choices and things like that. But, you know, I was very struck at the time by the use of the word lonely because, you know, these are men that are part of big families and great social circles and part of a community that really cares about them. But it is always hard when you think differently or do things differently. It takes some time to find your people and your tribe, and that doesn't happen unless somebody else talks about it. So that's why I bang on about it as much as I do. And it's not so much about wanting to tell my own story over and over again, but that's the story that I get to tell. I can't tell your story. I can't tell anybody else's story. But if every time I tell the story, I've had emails from people, literally old friends in the UK, you know, all over the world that have reached out and said, I really appreciate you sharing your story because it's made it possible for me to tell mine. So,
yeah. And we're talking about it this from an experiential point of view, and I will put it at the end of the show, and I will be putting it in the show notes too, that if you need help, please reach out, Lifeline. But, you know, yeah, we talk from places of experience, and I think for me, travel is kind of my happy place, and not that I'm not happy other places, but I guess it's where I'm most comfortable in me. And, you know, I the year I moved to the UK, and it was the year after I'd sort of had my depression first time, and I was like, I don't need these meds anymore. I'm having a great time. Don't do that. Talk to a doctor. It really possibly doesn't work. It doesn't work. Talk to a doctor. We are not going to talk about medication. That is certainly, that's a doctor conversation. Yeah. But really, prescribing yourself on and off is not a great idea. But I feel great because when I'm traveling, I feel connected. I feel connected to culture. I feel connected to places. I'm inspired by new things. And yeah, it is interesting. I want to explore it more, like going to places like India and knowing friends who definitely would have experience of mental health and mental illness, but talking about it in a society, talking about it in the community. And these are some of my friends are in very kind of cosmopolitan places, but it is still super taboo and very hard to understand. So there's a lot of other layers that go on it. So the fact that there is help, you know, I want to make people aware where I am that there's help. And that was the turning point in my journey always is when I asked for help.
Yeah. Well, I would say the last 20 years have really been the first two decades that we've talked about it with any seriousness in Australia. I mean, it's a generational thing partly, you know, it's an understanding that, you know, trauma is a complex and shifting beast depending on, you know, people's circumstances and all those kind of things. But I also think the really interesting thing about travel, and I think this is something you don't realise until after you've travelled quite a bit. I mean, I started travelling when I was about 17, and I was very lucky in my early big trips to be travelling basically with groups of friends. And it was, you know, through the Scouts Association, you know, there was these trips to Russia and Mexico and a few others, you know. So then I was doing my own travel around that. But it was the travel that I started to do on my own where I realised that if I was going somewhere else and I didn't know anyone, I could just be me. I didn't need to be the me that other people thought or needed or expected me to be. I didn't come with, you know, 20 years of being somebody else's brother, sister or friend. I was just there. And, you know, I still remember when I'd been living in England probably about 18 months, so probably shortly before I met Nick, I was just talking to somebody and just saying, oh, you know, so hot-headed and all the rest of it, you know. And she's like, I just find that extraordinary, Alison. She said, you're one of the most cheerful people I know. I've never seen you lose your temper. But yet my kind of worldview of myself was, you know, kind of shaped by, you know, my early 20s when I had been a hothead and all through my teenage years, you know, I very temperamental. And, you know, but you learn and evolve and all of a sudden you realise that actually you are quite a cheery person or quite optimistic or, you know, kindness is not weakness or any of those things because you're not shaped by other people's expectations. And I actually think that's where travel allows you to develop and grow as a person because you're not trying to hide behind a veneer. Nobody cares what your qualifications are. You know, all they want to know is what are you doing today? What are you doing tomorrow? And can they come along for the ride? You know, it's all sunsets and experiences. It's, you know, I mean, how often do we go and walk into our local churches here and just look up at the stained glass and go, wow? But yet we go over the seats and we can spend the entire day walking in and out of buildings going, wow, and just really exploring and really enjoying art for art's sake, you know, not because we're a pretentious wanker or we've been forced into it by a friend. You know, we can have opinions, we can explore ideas, we can see how other people live, what they value, all those kind of things. And I think that's why, you know, travel becomes your happy place, because you get to be just Emma, just Emma, you know. You know, and I would also frankly say that anybody that travels anywhere and comes back exactly the same, what were you doing? You know what I mean? Because you obviously weren't immersing yourself in the country.
Well, look, and even if people go and decide it's like not their thing, and like they we are talking about travel overseas, but certainly travel domestically and traveling just to see, because, you know, though Australia is a massive country, and like, although we don't vary quite as dramatically as like say the UK, where like you can go a county and the accent changes and some of the norms change and some of their habits and they've got all their little recipes and stuff, you know, Melbourne to Sydney to Brisbane may seem on the surface quite similar, but they're not. And I've been fortunate to live in different cities across Australia, and we have our own experiences with our own ways of doing things, and that's wonderful to experience too. And just, it's all different worldviews. And
well, definitely. I mean, you can even tell Queensland, you know, I mean,
I was like, oh no, we're both Queensland.
I was born in Queensland. My mother's a Darling Downs girl. My mother's a Brisbane boy. Obviously, my older brother was born on Manus Island. Various other siblings were born in Darwin, Canberra, and Sydney. And, you know, we lived all about. And, you know, but it is accents. You know, accents differ from state to state around here, and, you know, weather and all those kind of stuff. But, no, look, I moved from Canberra to Brisbane, from Brisbane, like this is as an adult, Canberra to Brisbane, Brisbane to Gympie. I thought I was a country girl. I'm not. Gympie to London, London to Dublin, Dublin to London, you know, and then back over here to Sydney. And, you know, everywhere I've lived, you know, I've got a fondness for everywhere I've ever lived, you know, kind of thing. But there are some places that are more you than others. And the thing is I'm a city girl, you know what I mean? I love to visit the country. I love to go up into the mountains. I like to go to the beach. I like to, you know, I like to explore. I've been caving. I've canoed down the Murray. I've visited every state of Australia, every territory. And I love something about all of them, kind of thing. But there is no way, it doesn't matter how much I love visiting friends in parks or going to the wineries in Orange, there's no way this city girl can ever live in the country again with any permanence. Do you know what I mean? Even when I go to the UK, my in-laws live in a little area called Shropshire up on the Welsh border.
Shropshire? How wonderful.
Yeah, south of Manchester. And it's a country town. There's no way, you know, if we moved back to the UK, we'd have to live in a city, a big-ish city, because Nick and I are city people, and it's just the way it is. We like the noise, we like the access, we like, and, you know, and that's kind of our happy place. So, yeah, it's all about finding those. Yeah.
Finding your happy place wherever it is, however it is. Well, thank you so much. You've given me the reminder to check my prejudice at the door and, you know, just don't take, you know, maybe like remember that people are whole and you have a history and a life before the time I met you. And ridiculous, because even the fact that you've travelled in the time that I've known you. So, and you're a wonderful, wonderful talker.
Thank you very much for inviting me to be part of this. It's got me... Yeah, it's once you get started, there's all these, like, I haven't even mentioned, like, so many of the things that I've done that I've really loved doing and all the rest of it, but it's nice just to revisit them. I can start writing my list of things I'm going to do when I'm filthy rich and my children are old enough.
Yes, well, and that's it. It's lovely. We, right now, certainly we're a little bit more limited and restricted in our movements. So right now with COVID-19, it's an even nicer time to revisit our travel memories and our travel stories. But, yeah, to also be able to stay connected despite we are physically distant.
That's it. And my big thing is always take photos. Everyone says you'll remember things, but you don't. Memory is so subjective to so many various things that, but photos are such evocative tools. I'm always, you know, they say just enjoy the moment. You can enjoy the moment and then take the photo. Don't,
don't forget the photo. I love it when people always say to me, like when I'm about to go on a trip, they're always like, Emma, don't forget to take photos. I'm like, seriously? Have you seen my Instagram? Like, God, if it, you know, we've got to tone that down a bit. So I've got to find the balance between.
That's where you just turn them all into chapbooks. Then it's hard copy as well as Instagram, you see.
I love it. Thank you so much. And I'll put
someone have a lovely evening.
You too.
Okay, thanks for listening this far, everyone. And thank you, Emma, for getting Alison on the podcast and having this great chat to her.
Yeah, thoroughly enjoyed it. She's a good talker. She's a good talkie. So it was great having her here.
Yeah, 100%. And if you enjoyed what you listened to and you want to listen to more, you can find us on Spotify, iTunes, Podigy, and other podcast aggregating sites.
Yeah. Make sure you subscribe, rate, and review. That helps us to know that you're liking it, but also to help other listeners to find us.
100%. And if you want to join in the conversation and get in touch with us, you can do so on info@lovelytravels.com. That's lovely with two L's. And visit the website, lovelytravels.com. Instagram, we're all over the Instagrams at Lovely Travels, and we have an amazing Facebook group filled with beautiful people just chatting about travel and sharing some memories there. So visit us there, Lovely Travels Facebook group.
Thanks, guys. Tune in next week, and we look forward to talking to you again.
That's right. See you then.
Bye.
Bye.